I have a very distinct memory of looking over with this picket fence in the backyard where the oil tank was, and looking up and seeing the New York City skyline in my head. So I always knew.
Hey everyone, it's Kara Lee.
This is Daniel.
And this is the Actor Hack Podcast.
Oh my god, I'm sorry.
No, I did that on purpose, actually.
Oh, so, okay, that's yeah, actually, that way it's a good sound.
We have Carrie with us today. Thank
Hello.
You for coming. Mm-hmm. Carrie, you were actually telling us earlier, when did you move to New York?
I moved to New York in August of 1994, yes, because I went to Fordham undergrad. And then I took 2 years and I was traveling after that, and then I came back for grad school. I went to Actor Studio when it was at New School.
Did you study theater in undergrad or no?
No, I did art history and theology.
Oh, right.
Nice.
Well, I was going to go pre-med. I always knew I wanted to be an actor, but I also knew I wanted to go to grad school. I felt like at 18, I wasn't mature enough to have halted my learning about anything else. And I just, I don't know. Back then, you could reasonably make this decision. I would never make it now because of the cost of school. But I was like, let me just learn stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. That'd be nice for a while.
Let me just learn stuff. And I also, I mean, I knew I wanted to be an actor, but I didn't come from an acting family, and I didn't come, so I didn't have anyone to really.
Why did you, how did you know you wanted to be an actor?
I was like 3. I just knew.
Did you apply to a bunch of grad schools, or did you know that you wanted to go to grad school in New York? Like, how was that?
I knew I wanted to be in New York. I'm embarrassed to say. A lot of big decisions I've made in my life have been very off the cuff. Off the cuff? On the cuff?
Off the cuff. I think it's off. Yeah.
I think it's off the cuff. Well, I sing also, so I was going after musical theater primarily at the time. And when I was a senior in college, I got a job as a backup singer for this woman who, and a week after I got the job, she booked the Lilith Fair when it was like in its second year, I think. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went right into doing shows with her.
That's really cool. You performed at the Lilith Fair?
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
That's really cool.
It was a good time. Plus, I was like, I mean, from senior, I graduated and left.
Yeah.
And did it. And so then, but I was here pretty much. Like, we would go and do shows and come back. In the meantime, I was auditioning for musical theater. And I think I'd forgotten about this, but I applied to AMDA. Got in, I didn't get barely any money. So I went to go talk to them and I said, there's no way I can go here unless we figure out how I can get more money. And then, I'll be honest, the people in the hallway were really snotty. So I was like, nah, I don't want to go here. That was that moment in time. Yeah. Could be wonderful now. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, so then all the touring was wrapping up and I thought, what am I going to do? And I knew I wasn't totally prepared to really be going. Just, I felt like I can get better at what I did. And my friend was at the action. This is the longest answer to this story.
No, I love it.
He was there and he loved it. And he said, you should really apply. And so I got a letter of recommendation sent to the school, and I was getting another one, and then some other stuff started happening. I started getting like readings and stuff like that, so then I just kind of stopped the audition process.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me, and they were like, can you, because they got one of the letters from my undergrad, my one acting class in undergrad. She said, we were wondering if you plan on continuing the application process. And I was like, and I went, I didn't know I started the application process. And so I was like, all right, my friend seems happy there. I need some training. I need to do this.
Yeah. How long was the program?
It's 3 years.
Okay.
So that's honestly what the amount of thought process that went into that, which is part of like my issue now, like looking back.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up right outside New Haven, near Yale.
Okay.
Somewhere I should have looked into.
Right.
Yeah.
So then when you graduated from that program, what did you do? Like, what was the next thing?
I'm trying to remember. I was still auditioning for music. I got in kind of the reading cycle of musical theater, and I got a lot of great readings. It was fun, but the projects never got funded, never moved forward. A couple of them did 2 or 3 pretty big backers things, but so mostly that. I also co-founded a development company with people, writing development and theater artist development.
Is that Cry Havoc?
Yeah, the Cry Havoc company. So that was right around then that we were kind of trying to raise money to get a space and things like that.
And
so
that with people that you went to school with, or just?
Kit LaVoy is the artistic director. We went to Fordham together.
Oh, okay.
Kit, Jen Reichert, Jenny Curlin, all went to Fordham. And the other two founding members, Tim Davis and Chris Stack, were Actor Studio.
Oh, okay.
Because Kit was the one I was talking about that was...
Oh, right, who liked the program.
Actor Studio, yeah. I honestly went through about 4 years of... I think I knew I didn't want to do musical theater anymore, or focus on it, but I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of... There was about a 4-year period where I was floating a little bit.
And so you guys were developing new straight plays? Or was it musical theater as
they
well?
They did musical theater. We have a pretty close relationship with Lonnie Price. And he developed Kiki Baby that was at the Nymph there with us. Yeah, because that's the one big full-length musical, I think, that we've done. Mostly straight plays. Mostly one-acts, short plays. We have a lot of workshops. A lot of new artists, like kids coming out of school.
Okay.
Basically to answer questions like, what would you do differently?
Right.
Yeah.
So then what was it that made you say, I don't want to do musical theater anymore?
And when I was in grad school, there was a teacher there that I got, Gene Lasko. He just passed this year. He was a fantastic, unbelievable teacher. He was Arthur Penn's kind of like right hand.
Gotcha.
He told me, and I know a lot of people hear this, but I actually knew when he said it that he was right. And he said a few things. He said, you can sing. And he was like, but I don't know that they're going to know what to do with you. And then he said, and you're funny. And he was like, you really should be focused on that, which I didn't listen to at the time, and I should have. And then he said, and you're probably not going to start working until you're about 40.
Yeah.
And he said, because they can't, he was like, I had, my voice was this low, I look like a 12-year-old.
You didn't fit thing. Easily into a box.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And I knew that, and I was okay with it. And so I kind of just was a slow burner for a while. But the musical theater thing, I just felt, it was a combination of, I had gotten the 3 years of straight acting training and fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And it's just a different style. It's a different thing. And it just felt more aligned with my instincts as far as keeping it slightly small. What didn't click on for me at the time, which should have, was TV film. It just literally didn't cross my radar. I was like, I'm a theater actor.
Mm-hmm.
So was there no concentration on that in the program at all?
No. Actors Studio is primarily, I don't know if it's changed since, I don't think it has, but it's pretty strictly craft driven, just theater acting, acting. I mean, you could easily translate it to TV film. I mean, this is studio method stuff, but there was never like an on-camera class or things like that. I don't know if they've changed that.
Which in the span of 3 years is insane.
My whole thing on grad school. I just had a conversation last night with somebody, and I said, with the cost of grad school right now, I hate to use this word, but I said this, we've talked about it before, that it's a sham. There's two girls that I'll occasionally do like a really low cost scene study class, because it occurred to me, I'm like, I have this degree. How about you not go into debt like I am, and I'll just tell you what I know?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Right.
So I'll do that. And I'll tell you what I've learned, and not, because don't get me wrong, I became a better actor in there. Absolutely. They know what they're talking about, as far as, but in all honesty, I don't think you can take somebody who isn't prepared to do this for life and make them fantastic. Like, I think that is something you are born with on some level. You can get better. You can get sharper, you can get, and I think that's why it's important. These two girls who took a class with me, they are close to $200,000 in debt.
Oh my God.
That's a house.
Yeah.
That's a house. And you could tell, and they're not, I mean, I signed those promissory notes by myself in an office, not being told what it really meant. I didn't come from a family that taught me about money, basically.
What's a promissory note?
A promissory note is when you promise to pay this money back.
Oh, okay.
I remember the first time I signed one, I was 18 years old in the middle of the Bronx by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't read, please. You're like, I get to go to school.
Right, whatever.
Yeah,
beer.
And then you don't read the fine print. For example, one fine print thing is if you default on your student loan, they immediately tack 20% onto your principal.
Oh, shit.
20%. So you owe $200,000? It's a lot of friggin' money.
That's a lot of money.
And they don't tell you that. That's in the tiniest, tiniest print on the bottom of it. And, yeah, so they owe $200,000. So if you do, I owe significantly less than that, but I owe a lot.
Yeah.
I owe 50% less than that. My payments now, I can't pay right now because I'm home with the baby mostly and I have to defer every now and again. My payments now, if I were paying, would be around $1,000 a month. And that's owing $1,000, $100,000.
And when did you graduate?
1,000,000 years ago. 1,000,000 years ago.
You understand? 2003. What I'm asking.
2003.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
That's incredible.
It's okay. So my point is, okay. So if you're going to charge this much money, you really have to start looking at it like a consumer, unfortunately, which mm-hmm. is what's happening to colleges across the world.
Right.
Country, which is not good. But you have to look at, is there going to be a return on my investment? Because mm-hmm. this is a gigantic investment. And if there is no business classes, and when I tell you most grad schools do not have a class in, what the hell am I doing when I leave here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the majority, the great majority of them do not.
And that's a crime. Like, mm-hmm. The rate, with what they're charging now, that, and I've gone back to the Actors Studio and kind of petitioned. I started small. I was like, you know what? I think your showcase maybe could run differently.
Yeah, because did you have a showcase?
We did, and it was awful. Like, looking back on it, I was also the only one not approached by representation. My friend made me feel better. She said, "Don't worry, Paul Rudd. That same thing happened to Paul Rudd."
I was like, "Thank you, Paul Rudd.
Thanks, Paul."
I mean, I was smart about the scene I picked. I don't remember what it was, but it was something I could play. It was in the commercial world. It was mm-hmm. not like I would have done something funny. In hindsight, I did something dramatic.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's something I can do, but lead with funny, especially if you're a woman. Lead, honestly.
A showcase would be a perfect opportunity to, like, give a real world run.
And right. Sort of and show that you understand that you, where you fit in this market, mm-hmm. that you, and, I mean, I've heard that that's not changed, and B, I've heard that some people were doing film scenes. And I'm talking from famous films.
I've heard this too, and it just makes me very embarrassed.
Like Godfather?
Like Sophie's Choice.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Being wow. funny, right?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but and you can't talk to them about it because they are very based in this school working, which, again, if you're Bradley Cooper. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a good actor, he went through school, he swears by it, and I do swear by the craft side of it, because it's actually very, very good, but I would say, I think 60 actors were my class, I would maybe say 10 are still working, and I'm talking 2 years after we went through school.
Wow, okay, so they...
Because they kind of just take way too many people, first of all, because I'm sure they have some agreement with the university, I don't know how it is with Pace now, that they have to maintain a certain... But it's just gotten, now it's gotten, I'm just actually angry about it because if you're a poor kid, or if you're a middle class kid at this point, and no one's financially supporting you and to just live, how are you going to pay $2,000 a month back and continue auditioning?
It's impossible.
It's literally impossible. And it was always hard. And it was hard since I graduated, but it's literally impossible.
And deciding to, like, study something as unprofitable as acting.
Right.
In that atmosphere.
My biggest beef, though, really, is to not prepare, they're just taking money.
Yeah.
They're not preparing, I mean, there should be, the interview process should be bigger to get in, because there should be guidance. People should be telling you, this is what this is about. This is what you're going to owe when you leave. What do you want out of this experience? If what you want is to be a famous actor, you need to rethink this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be a college professor? Okay, but that's fine. But just know that currently they mostly are only hire adjuncts.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York, it's almost impossible to get a job, like an acting job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and going through a conservatory might not be the best way to get there, right?
Right.
I mean, that's not the best plan.
Also,
for
especially in acting, like, they'll take somebody with credits over somebody with a degree mm-hmm. to teach their students.
Do you think the piece of paper has helped you?
It helped. One thing it helped, like, because seemingly there was a gap in my experience, but then mm-hmm. they're like, oh, she was studying for 3 years.
Right.
That helped. It wasn't like, what were you doing, hanging out?
Right.
That helped. I think some people do appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, honestly, it did make me a better actor. So I think that it helps me in the room.
Yeah.
The piece of paper itself, I don't think anyone gives a crap.
Part of it should at least be treated like it's a trade, so have it be like a trade school. Don't just teach me how to do it once I get a job. Teach me how to get the job, you know?
Exactly.
And what I need to know and what that world is even like.
And the,
you know?
When I tell you the things that you don't know leaving my school, for example, I had to learn. That's why it kind of took me a while to get traction, because I was like, I had to teach all that to myself. So I'm like, why do I have this degree? When we were talking last night, I was saying, man, if I started grad school, it would be finance classes, it would be marketing classes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It would be on-camera classes, and then there would have to be the technique classes, but it wouldn't be it wouldn't be the focus, because the good people are going to get great anyway. You give them one acting class, they're going to get great. You know, I hate to say it like that, but it's true. And then the people that are just savvy marketers are going to do well. You know, I think they pitch a lie, basically. Come to the school, get better. Okay, but are you going to act in your closet somewhere? And, like, where right. are you going to, like, when I just did a class recently, I mostly just did it for friends. This young group of girls who came from the actor studio are kind of floating right now. And I'm like, all right, just let's at least get in a room and
let's work. Yeah.
And I did four classes, and the very last class I was like, all right, you got to bring somebody. Bring, I don't care. Stop a stranger on the street. Bring them. Because actors need an audience. That's another thing, that grad school mentality is people just convince themselves that by being in a classroom, you are an actor. And I don't ever want to take anyone's identity away, like, or how you identify. If you identify as an actor, it's an art. But actors, by definition, are supposed to be seen by somebody.
Yeah, you don't have to be doing anything all that interesting, but somebody has to be watching you.
Right. People can leave and say you're awful.
Right.
But somebody has to... I don't know. It's very extremely frustrating. I worry about the generations coming up that are doing this, and I try to advise anyone I run into. I'm like, just if you're going to go into grad school, at least know why you're doing it. Has to be beyond you think it's going to help you in this business.
Right.
And it has to, I would highly suggest looking at those free programs. And if you don't get in, seriously consider going, period, for two reasons. One, you don't want to pay somebody else. And two, you just got rejected by 10 schools that suggest, I mean, at least just think about it. I hate to be that.
No, blunt. I think that's great.
I mean, it's made my life quite difficult. I also married somebody who has the same debt. There's been things we've had to turn down. Things are such a slow burn for us because there's moments where we've had to choose our waitressing shift
mm-hmm.
over.
Yeah, because you have to pay bills.
Some auditions. I mean, like, some auditions, of course, we'd never turn down, but some, we literally have to rationalize the way we wouldn't when we were 25. Or if we didn't have this debt, we'd find a way to be there.
When you got into the real world, how did you start learning what you needed to know?
I'll tell you exactly, and I swear by these people, because they're just such cool people, have been so supportive of me, and it's exactly this. I took a class at Laura Rosenthal Casting. I had never really... it sounds like I'm reaching for something, but I'm not. I'm just being honest. I never thought I'd look good on film, so I never thought about it. I never even considered it. I was a theater actor.
Well, you weren't really
musical
exposed
theater,
to it.
And I wasn't exposed to it, so it never crossed my mind. So I was like, why am I doing that to myself? All of a sudden, and right then was when that class came up, which was 3 years ago, I think. I took that, and that's literally changed the trajectory of everything. I learned so much in 3 days from them.
And it was about film casting?
It was about on-camera casting, uh-huh. specifically how to do certain, you know, like day player stuff, co-star stuff, up to guest star stuff, the differences, the nuances.
There's mm-hmm. just like little technical stuff that you need to know in order to...
The pacing. You're like, watch these shows. What's the pacing of this show versus the pacing of that show? I mean, little things. They're really straightforward. They're really very supportive of actors. I also went in very hungry because I felt like I had a... You know, you buy all the stuff that you're getting old and you're a woman. You might as well just kill yourself.
Right. Like, I don't have any time.
I know. I'm dying. And then they started bringing me in for stuff, which ended up working out pretty well.
Because I saw you just did a day on Limitless, right?
Oh, that's a whole other thing. Okay, so...
Sorry, I'm jumping.
That. It's the... okay. So I did that class, and then I got really hungry to take classes. So then Jody at Laura Rosenthal also teaches her own class with this girl McCall Zecker, who was in casting at CBS. So they do, and it was really this fun, laid back, had cocktails. It was
sounds great.
No, it's awesome.
Where's that one?
It's awesome. They do it. They still do it. It's called Casting and Cocktails every now and again. And it was just also very informed and very, but it was laid back. And I did like six of those. And McCall went into management last year, and she knows me very well from these classes. So she was, if anything came across her desk that she was like, oh my god, she's exactly right for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
She would submit me, and then I started getting callbacks, and then I booked The Affair and Limitless back to back. She signed me like right after that. We talked.
That's amazing.
It. Yeah, yeah. No, it's been it's been great because I just feel very confident with it because she knows me very well as a person and because we got to be friends. But
and so you feel like someone speaking for you who knows.
It's made
you.
A huge difference because Oh, and also too, I've on my own. I've been just watching a lot more TV just to know what's out there. Watching a lot more TV. If I see a world that I live in, I see who's casting it, and then I go take one of their seminars, and then I call her, and I'm like, okay, I just met this person. So if something comes up, you could say, oh, you met her here. I mean, you have to do you can't... I think that's another fallacy, that if you have representation, that they do all the work.
It's a partnership, really. Right. I mean, both sides have to be doing something. You know, it's like I think about how you describe these classes, and I don't understand why those classes can't be part of mm-hmm. a curriculum.
They see, I mean, I guess it depends on the school. I don't know how it is at Yale. I don't know if they do that.
I don't know if now there's been more pressure to do that, but I know historically, even the fancy schools are in their own bubble.
You can get away with that if you're not charging. It's still not smart, in my opinion, but you can get away with it if you're not charging. You can get away with it if you're not 3 years.
That's a long program.
And that's another thing. I mean, there's 0% reason, now that I'm older and I look back, that that program should have been 3 years long. Yeah. My program. There's no reason. They also should have weeded people out, which they didn't do. Again, I'm going to be perfectly blunt and honest, but if you let anyone in, and you let anyone roll through, it diminishes the value of what mm-hmm. your product.
I absolutely agree. And I think if you're going to, I also am all about like eliminating people, because I think if you want it enough and someone eliminates you from a program, you're going to find it, you'll work harder. But if it just takes yeah. someone being like, you're not cut out for this, and you're like, okay, I'll try something else, then you shouldn't have been doing it in mm-hmm. the first place.
Right, right.
And maybe you're just not right for that program.
Right.
You know, maybe you need to find something that works better for you.
I think with all of these programs and classes and things, you're not doing anybody any favors by being nice.
Mm-mm.
You know, and I look back on our undergrad, and the professors that were considered tough were that should have been like the minimum.
Bare minimum.
Yeah.
I just had one of these times that I got some people together, I had to tell someone she had to leave. I got an email from somebody else in the class who said that she made her uncomfortable. And she did. She was somebody who had zero control of her, and it was somebody from my program.
Mm-hmm.
Zero control. The bad side of the method. The stereotype of the method,
yeah.
basically.
Gotcha.
Where they, you know, just pure instinct, I do, you know, whatever, and but I have no control over it.
You need to reel that in.
Yeah. Yes. Well, basically, that's
the unproductive yeah. aspect.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. And she, it was, and I didn't think I was doing her any favors by pretending that, by being nice, not nice about it, because the fact of the matter is, when she did work, she was magnetic, and she really was, and I was like, but there's no way you're ever gonna repeat a director, you're never gonna go back and work on a project.
Yeah.
Right.
If you can't pull your shit together.
And you don't have the skills to teach her how to do that.
Right, I'm not a therapist. So, I said, yeah. I was like, I'm not your therapist.
Yeah.
And no acting teacher is. And no one in this business is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying you need a therapist, that's your own business to figure out. But I wasn't doing her any favors by pretending that
what she was doing was appropriate.
Yeah.
And from the student's perspective, too, like, this is what I'm here to learn, and I'm paying you a lot of money to mm-hmm. get it. If I'm not getting it, then I'm not going to stay here anymore.
That's actually, yeah. speaking of the money and universities, that's something, too. When you really look at it, especially if they're bringing on these adjuncts left and right, they're not tenure-track professors, they're not, no benefits if you're an adjunct.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this money going?
Yeah.
It's all administrative costs. Because I know adjuncts don't make. My friend was pretty much head of the dance track at some school and was an adjunct. No
Come
benefit.
On.
Like, full-time adjunct, creating and running the program.
But not treated as such.
Right. So where is $200,000 a year from each student going?
They have just recently released all these studies about how these deans and chancellors, how their pay scale works, and it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're making so much money.
And how, my new favorite thing is my friends who do teach college, is the number of, because of the cost of college, we're talking about that consumer thing. I mean, I think on some level you have to look at it like that, because mm-hmm. of the cost, but it's affecting the mindset of students and parents. My friends get calls from parents.
Like,
no.
We're talking seniors in college.
No.
The do not call
seniors
me.
Seniors in college. No. Because from their perspective, they're spending $100,000 a year.
Right.
Or however, $70,000 a year. And it's become the customer's always right.
Are you staying home with your daughter right now? Or do you have like a job?
Yes. I was temping, but it's because Matt's schedule's in flux.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, until he gets like a set, I can't really. But I've been sustaining enough from acting at this point.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's all,
I mean, that's kind of the goal, right?
Like, yeah. It's very, you know, if it were just me and him, it would be fine. It's with her at it, it's still mm-hmm. very tight. But
before you had your daughter, what was your job that you had while you were auditioning?
What did I do? I worked at a salon for a long time. Then I had the caving year, the year that I freaked out, which was, that was like 36, 37. I was like, I can't do this anymore, I gotta get, and I applied for this job, and they hired me to be the site director of this, like, and I had this whole crisis of the soul, because I was like, if this means I'm, this is what I do,
I have a career.
It's like, in hindsight, it's crazy. But I mean, it was true though. It demanded that much time. It was
what's
the most
a site
stressful
director
for an after school arts program.
Oh, I remember when you were doing this. Yeah.
Well, it was the best decision I ever made because I realized really fast that I am supposed to be an actor and not in there. And it was the most stressful, and it was just not a well-run organization. Not that I wouldn't know how to run it better. So I quit that. Like, literally, I was like, and the trail of events since then. Oh, I booked St. Vincent, the right then. And then Ansel Goes that same summer.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to Norway and taught for 5 weeks. Because they started a school of, they're doing it the right way. They started a school for method acting, but they do every aspect. I mean, they do on camera, the students do everything. Like, they do all sides of it, casting, they do learn all this stuff. So I went out and taught there for 5 weeks, and I thought I was sick. I thought, like, I had terrible jet lag for 5 weeks. I'd convinced myself. I was like, this is the worst case of jet lag.
It just won't go away.
And it was Jane. But, I came back further along than I just had no signs of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And I was almost 4 months when I came back. So I was already starting a show, so it was a little difficult to get, like, any kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of stretched out the Norway money and stretched out. And then what happened? She was born. I would do classes. I mean, I would just started... Basically, necessity bred creativity.
Right.
I just started doing little workshops and things like that. Like, anything I could actually teach. Like, some voice. I could teach voice. I could do that.
Was that all through Was and Is through Cry Havoc? Or is it separate?
No, I did that myself.
Oh, okay. So just independently.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And
how long after you gave birth did you start auditioning again?
Like a week later.
Really?
It's necessity breeds creativity. I need to eat. Yeah. I lost a lot of weight pregnant. I think I had extra weight on me before from terrible diet, too much whiskey, whatever. I cleaned it all up while I was pregnant. So
right.
I lost. I mean, I gained her.
Right.
But I lost a lot of the extra weight, so when she was born, it all just dropped off.
And so then, having Jane, then, since your husband is also an actor, how do you guys do that?
A lot of cool friends, day by day. As each problem approaches, we just figure it out then.
So there's not, like, a set schedule, it's just kind of audition by audition, or... Mm-hmm.
Ideally, he'll go back to a schedule that's later in the day, nighttime, because then, A, I can temp again just to bring more money in or something, whatever I gotta do, and then it frees both of us up, even if we go sit at the audition with her. She's at an age now where we can't... When she was a baby, strangers, like, people in the lobby would watch her.
Oh, yeah, people are always
great.
Jazzed
they're
to
hold
so,
baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, now she cries when I leave, so it's like she's more aware, so I can't really do that. Honestly, her being born has propelled me. Everything's gotten better. It's the exact opposite of what people are afraid of.
Yeah.
No, I was wasting a lot of time. I was all caught in my own trip before that. And then, that's me. It's not, I don't know what anyone else needs, but I needed something to kind of shake me.
And so it like gave you a focus?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's actually really, because now it's, I have no choice.
Yeah, the stakes are higher.
The stakes are, like literally, somebody was saying, I was like, they're like, well, you could go, you're very smart, you can go do something else. I was like, first of all, no, I can't. I am smart, but I can't. I'm almost 40 years old. I know what I want to do.
You look fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks.
She looks great, everybody.
Clean living. I went through that scary period where I started to self-doubt and, you know, worry about my future, which, of course, I'm still worried about. But I know for a fact now.
I think, just knowing actors, I think that auditions get better when you're like, no, this is the life that I'm, like, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And not like... I'd really want to be an actor and go into the room with that energy and that sort of...
You're way too afraid to make a mistake.
Yeah.
You can't be afraid to make a mistake. You can't, because you show nothing of yourself if you're too afraid to fuck up.
Yeah, because I think some people are in the mindset of like, I have to get this job, or, you know, I have to get this job to validate what I'm trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think that when you go into a room and you're like, no, I'm an actor and this is just one of the many auditions that I'll be going on this week. It might go my way. It might not. I think that you are able to do the work. Then.
Totally. And the thing that I was the most afraid of happening has happened, but it's had a completely different outcome than I thought would. Mm-hmm. Before I had Jane, I thought, I'm afraid of the moment when she becomes more important. I'm being honest.
Like, yeah,
like,
no,
I'm afraid,
I love that.
Like that... That because then I'm done. That's what I thought. And it happened at an audition. I had a stranger watching her, and I heard her start crying, and I was in the room, and I was like, fuck. And then all of a sudden, this peace came over me, and it was just like, she's fucking more important than this.
Yeah.
She's just more important than this.
Yeah.
And I relaxed. I had the exact, like, it was like, yeah, all right, I'm just going to continue this audition. Everything's not hung up on it. I don't care how important the audition is. That's the most important thing, and feeding her. Auditions got 10 times better.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Because I was just like, hey, guys.
Yeah, right.
Hey, everyone. It's 5 minutes to do what I paid a lot of money. But now I feel like anything's... I'm open to doing anything. And it comes up all the time. Only to me, not to my husband. Am I sure I can do these things with the baby? That question gets asked to me all the time.
But no one ever asks him.
Never. Because the assumption is he's the provider still. And you'd never think that assumption's still out there. But it, when it comes to... I never ran into it until she was born. She's mobile. She's right. A human.
She travels.
She travels. So. She doesn't have other plans.
Right. Like, you know, let me check her schedule.
Yeah. There's a couple of birthday parties to work out. But
we do a thing where we each give our own hack. I actually have a podcast recommendation. There's an interview that The Nerdist does with Eric Stonestreet, and I've like recommended this to like all of the actors that I know, just because he talks really, first of all, it's hilarious, and then second of all, he talks really candidly about what it is to test for pilots, how many he did, what all led up to him being where he is, and it's one of the few podcasts that I've listened to, like, by a famous person that I feel doesn't skim over the hard parts. Mm-hmm. Like, he really talks about the years, and he gives really great advice just, you know, for actors to, like, when they leave an audition, to just let it fucking go. Mm. Throw away your sides.
That's a, I, you know? I have the whole total ritual of, I know they usually provide sides at I mean, you're emailed them, but then they have a hard copy at the audition. But I always print them up and bring them and then leave. And as I leave, I rip them up.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not my job. Until it's my job, it's not my job.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So it's just, and it...
It's so out of your control. Like, yeah. Yeah, well, actually, you going in that room, you just did your job. It's over.
Exactly.
Now.
I did that. I did my part. And then that's...
Yeah, and that isn't anything yet. I mean, it's a script on a page, but mm-hmm. It isn't anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even worry about it. It's not even a thing yet.
What's the name of that podcast?
It's funny, I actually brought this up earlier, but I was talking about how Kristen Ritter had it too easy. Yeah, so it's The Nerdist interview with Eric Stonestreet. I would 100% recommend it.
Okay,
so I just thought of something, but actually it doesn't pertain to your story at all, but it's actually just something that I thought of that's really cool, is that you're never going to learn something that you don't know until you admit that you don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, some of the... I've myself, like, struggled for months or years with something because I was too afraid to ask somebody, like, hey, actually, I don't know how this works at all. Can you just tell me what you know about this? And, like, that little bit of humility can save you a lot of time and a lot mm-hmm. of strife. And absolutely. So, you know, fuck your pride.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just admit that you don't know something. And there's somebody there that'll probably help you out.
And you, A, there's somebody that will probably and definitely help you out. Because that's one thing I have learned is how much people do want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially if they're higher up. If they
don't
come
know how.
Through.
Yeah.
And they don't know how. They don't know you need help. And they don't know how to. But you ask and they're willing to help.
Yeah.
So I think.
Fuck your pride. I like that one.
Mine, I think, would. I guess for right now, I could sit and think of a million things, but would be to reiterate, it's a stupid little hack for young girls out there. If someone's encouraging you to lead with funny, just do it. Not everyone has an edge for comedy. If you do,
it's golden.
It doesn't mean it's golden, and
totally.
it doesn't mean you have no. In fact, most, as we've seen, comedic actors are brilliant dramatic actors because they're probably pretty dark people. But
we're going to need to have you back at some point if you're willing to.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone, the music that you are listening to is All That Glitters by Sweet Soubrette from the album Days and Nights.
Please send us an email, afterhackpodcast@gmail.com.
Subscribe to us, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.